Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go at the end of the first full week of November 2015, not February, but November. This is The Horn. It is the sixth day of November 2015, and, well, it's Friday on the front porch, by Jove. And so, consequently, we will expect here in fairly short order to crank up the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that happens every Friday here on The Horn. And, of course, if you want to jump into the multimedia side of the chat conversation, well, just run on right over. Let's back that up. Just run right on over to headonradionetwork.com. Click on chat room. Pick yourself out a username and a password, and well, bang, you'll be there, right there in the room. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Note coming in from Ron in the unfrozen north. We be listening hard up here in the eastern Ontario, and we be liking what we be hearing. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Thank you. Awfully glad to know it. And we'll have we'll get the whole Skype gang together, and hopefully have we had a really good rousing conversation last week. We're just lucky that way, I guess. Of course, I would be remiss if I did not note that this is a listener-supported operation. We are in the midst of trying to grow our subscriber base, based upon a suggestion by Joan from Talibandiana this past week. Exactly a week ago, to be precise. We're still looking for a really good name. Fireball 400, Fast Forward 400. We're looking to be alliterative, I think. I was thinking about the future 400. But anyway, we're looking for 400 people to sign up for a $10 a month contribution. And that way, produce enough contributions that I can stop mentioning fundraising altogether. And we're making some progress, not a great deal, but some. And there's a thank you out there for anyone who does this. You can have I happily send you one of two of the bumper stickers contributed by our buddy Scott, the They Want It All bumper sticker, complete with Scott's own design of the big toothy pig in the top hat with the dollar sign on it and the monocle. And underneath it says in small print, Head On Radio Network, 10 years, so in celebration of our 10th anniversary, right? Or a horn bumper sticker, okay? And and given where we stand with fundraising this evening, to wit, $385. And thanks very kindly to Chris overnight for knocking that down, to where it was, so it would only be $385 this evening. We have a fundraising challenge on the table, courtesy of Billable Rick. This evening on the table is the Billable Rick Give a Bonus to Bob Challenge. It should probably be titled the Billable Rick Give a Bonus to the Horn Challenge. He says, to commemorate receipt of my annual performance bonus, I will contribute $50 to the horn and match that with another $50 once the challenge has been met. You know, we could get this thing rolling and actually finish the week okay. Yes. So it's on the table. The Billable Rick Give a Bonus to the Horn Challenge. The first $50 that come in get matched and then doubled, or then matched again, I guess. Yeah, trebled. Yeah. So there it is. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com/contribute, and that's how we make all of this go. And yay, verily, there are bills. Lots and lots of bills. So hopefully that will be met in fairly short order. Thank you very kindly, Billable Rick. Thank you indeed. Also out on the table is Chris's equipment fund challenge. Remember, we've got every gizmo we need to go and do the fill in work for Malloy, our good friend Mike Malloy. We got one gizmo to go. Mm-hmm. And so Chris in Germany has kindly put a $250 challenge on the table for that. It's good through this evening. Yes, it is good through this evening. And of that $250 challenge, $75 has been met, so we got $175 to go. Okay, same deal. It goes through the goes through the PayPal interface, or you can go with the United States Postal Service. But if you use the PayPal, just put a memo in there, say equipment fund. That's all you got to do. And then finally, the Postal Service. Yes, the mailing address, the horn, and this is for checks and money orders made payable to the horn, not made payable to Bob. I never see him. I don't touch it. The horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Mm-hmm. All right, then. Let's see, a couple more suggestions. The Fantastic 400 or the Fortunate 400, apropos in several ways, says Randy suggests the Fantastic 400. Ron suggests the Fortunate 400. And Ron also notes that I already read that one. Okay. All right. Very good. So it's 8 minutes past the hour, 8 minutes past 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, and with the change to normal non-daylight savings time, which of course saves no daylight whatsoever. This time of year and in the spring when we go back to daylight savings time, I always think about that wry observation attributed to an indigenous person here on this continent who said only a white man, in regard to daylight savings time, only a white man would think that you can cut fabric off the bottom of the blanket and sew it to the top of the blanket and have more blanket. That's daylight savings time and standard time in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. So, it's dark, I think, is what I was getting at. Yes. I guess it sort of... Wow, thank you. Well, that's great. Hey. Billable Rick's challenge has been met. Thank you very kindly to John out on the road and to Sister Carol Baker and an anonymous individual who says, I'll match Billable Rick's challenge and throw another $50 challenge on the table. Got it. Okay, so it's been met. So that means there's another $50 challenge on the table, and we might be able to finish the week not in the hole. And you know what? If we do all that, anything extra that comes in, I'm going to put over to the equipment fund. If we can get past that 385 mark, I'll put it over to the equipment fund so that we can make sure and hopefully meet Chris's equipment fund challenge as well. Okay? Yes. No, it's actually, this Friday comes with a little bit of celebration, doesn't it? I mean, something rather important happened today. And I'm talking about the announcement by President Obama that the Keystone XL planet-killing pipeline, well, no, not planet-killing, that's hyperbole. There's no human agency that can destroy this planet. Bad 50s sci-fi movies notwithstanding. I mean, we're trying to drill to the... No. No. There's nothing... nothing we can do that's going to destroy the planet. But nonetheless, the Keystone XL pipeline did stand a better than reasonable chance of accelerating the processes that look to be making it more and more likely that the planet will not be habitable for humanity. Okay? I think that's what I was getting at. You may recall last week in the wake of Monsieur Trudeau's victory au Canada.
Yay!
And I'm sure it was just a coincidence that TransCanada politely asked the United States government to stop review of the Keystone XL pipeline. Okay, hey, time out. Okay, Jack. Okay, time out. And the Obama State Department said, "Nah, we're going to keep reviewing." Because see what TransCanada hoped was that by getting the State Department to stop the review process, that it could sort of go into a limbo sort of situation, a sort of suspended animation, until hopefully the oil billionaires like the Koch brothers and whatnot could pump enough money into the election process to get a God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, hydrocarbon-saturated, Christ-centered Republican into the White House, who would immediately say, "It's on. Let's build it for Jesus and Jobs." Right? Well, that didn't work out. Because the Obama administration and President Obama specifically today announced that there will be no Keystone XL pipeline all the way through the United States. Now, granted, they've built it pretty much from the Texas coast up into Oklahoma Stan, but the rest of it, no, it's going nowhere. And that will make it ever so much more difficult. I mean, could they build a pipeline for TransCanada? I don't think so. No. Interesting, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure that was just a... it was just a coincidence of events, right? Yeah. So we've got something to celebrate. We really, really do. I mean, Bill, I hope somewhere in Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, indivisible, under God, I hope Bill McKibben's got a Hawaiian print shirt on and a drink in a hollowed out coconut shell with one of them little paper umbrellas and some fruit on a plastic sword in it, and is just a toasted, because you know what, they deserve it. The people centered movement that that included ranchers in Nebraska and flinty, gritty people in Texas, grannies in Texas, who said, "Well, hell no, we ain't coming across my land, them Canadians." And yes, 350.org. Because Bill McKibben and his organization made this pipeline the signature issue of the environmental movement in the last 10 years. Truly. What have I done? What did I say, Thomas? Thomas from FYI Nation. Bob Kincaid, if you're Phil Bobster, it's going to be so damn funny. I can't get to sleep for my schedule. Could you warn a guy first? Thankies. Love that first hour. That was from last night. Yeah, because I didn't think I'd been particularly funny yet. Of course, I don't think I'm ever particularly funny. But, no, they did. Bill McKibben and his organization made the Keystone XL pipeline the signature environmental issue of a decade. And they have won. The victory is to them. And they deserve all the praise in the world for what they did. And they stood up. They stood up to the wealthiest industry on earth, and used the most powerful word in the English language or any other language, as it may be expressed. They said no, no. And so, congratulations, Bill McKibben, and all of you at 350, and everybody who went out and worked with 350, and took whatever action you did to stop the Keystone XL pipeline. Congratulations, for instance, to our friends, the Waco Friends of Peace, and our good friend, Dr. Allen, who behind the hydrocarbon curtain, if you will, in deeply conservative Waco, Texas, mounted informational pickets demanding an end to demanding that the Keystone XL pipeline not happen. It takes courage to do something like that in the face of unified opposition to your philosophy. And they built networks, and they made friends, and they are deserving of our admiration. Here's the rub. No rest. No rest. I mean, I joke about Bill McKibben. I don't think Bill drinks anything stronger than spring water. I joke about him with the hollowed out coconut shell and, you know, Mai Tai. Probably not. And even if it was true, there's no time for it. The surest way to win a battle and lose the overall struggle is to stop and backpat and congratulate and hail fellow well met. Because I'm not trying to spoil anybody's parades or anything. Grassroots activism is something that is 24/7. It's one of the reasons it is so damned hard. because the other side just gets paid to ruin ruin the ability of the planet to support human life. And so they walk out of the office and turn out the lights and go home and engage in that cognitive dissonance that Kurt Vonnegut was talking about when he said a person living on the living in a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. Yeah, you turn out the lights, you go home, and you know you look at your shiny, lovely children, and this is your beautiful wife, and this is your beautiful home. By the way, if we were doing video, you would see me chopping up my arm just like David Byrne. And you get up the next morning and you go and do it again. And every couple of weeks, you log on and you daggum, they put more money in your bank account to work on ruining the ability of the planet to support human life. Good for you. But it's not like that when you're in the grassroots. Because, among other things, there will not be anything going into your bank account, and there was the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Republicans, etc. Well, they're not going to sing your hallelujahs and your praises. And you may get a Laurel and Hardy handshake from the big greens, but at the end of the day, you're still going to struggle to make your car payments, or maybe drive on bald tires, or make a make choices between the rent and the car insurance, or groceries and the car insurance, or what have you, because that's life in the grassroots. You see what I mean? By the way, Brother Deacon Asa out on the left coast of Canada says, wonder if Chairman Harper will commit suicide one of these days. First, the thorough ass-whooping in the election, and now the cause that he so tirelessly shilled for right down the toilet. But Asa, they probably don't see it that way. It just means that they didn't buy enough politicians. It just means that they didn't work hard enough to corrupt the system. It just means that they didn't game the entire process quite thoroughly enough. They'll be back. Oh, yes, they will. And someday, when the price of oil gets high enough per barrel again to make it worthwhile to ship that filthy slop all the way from the hellscapes of Alberta to the Gulf of Mexico so they can put it on a boat and send it to China, someday they'll build it. Or they'll try again. Maybe they can hold the Senate and put a say a because see look, a President Jebbia, a President Trump, a President Carson, even if he isn't on some national endeavor to build pyramids to store Wheaties or something. All of those guys think, President Lindsey Graham down there in the ancestral home at Smoldering Chode, Senator Lindsey Graham loves him some Keystone XL. Chris Christie, even though he's been relegated to the kitty table, well, wait, wrong accent, even though he's been relegated to the kitty table, Chris Christie loves him some Keystone XL, and by God, they are agitating to get him back up there among the grown-ups. I had one of those right-wing emails I'm forever getting earlier today. Saying that Republicans are not going to stand for this. Oh, hell no. The Republican voters want Christie at the grown-up table. Interestingly, Republican voters don't want Christie. I mean, he's still polling somewhere in negative numbers, isn't he? Or has he crawled up over zero? Michael in Madison says, now that the Keystone Pipeline has been killed, I'm hoping for your sake, Bernie will announce plans to construct the New Glarus to Beckley Spotted Cow Pipeline. Now, there's a pipeline I could back. All that wonderful spotted cow goodness flowing from New Glarus, Wisconsin, all the way to the hills and hollers of West By God, Virginia. I think we should, you know what, we should make the terminus of the pipeline Secret Sandwich Society, Michael. What do you think? They loves their beer over there, and I tell you what, they would go at the chief beer taster selector, Cicerone is the word, would go absolutely wild over a glass of Spotted Cow, no doubt about it. And Randy, by the way, points out what you may not realize about the Keystone XL pipeline. With the low cost of energy today, the Canadian tar sands may no longer be economically viable, which may make the XL pipeline no longer economically viable. But it will become viable as oil becomes harder and harder to get at. They jumped the gun is what they did. And the Saudis have enough oil that, hey, we don't want those guys muscling in on our business. Remember the Saudis?
Our partners in peace, the good headloppers.
Right. Marty is almost a bigger pessimist than I. Says there will be no Keystone XL pipeline until NAFTA's invoked, or TPP. A little disturbed, yes. So we have that to celebrate. But remember, and just this goes to my my Wheatie peeing, they're still fracking the bejesus out of a whole bunch of the country. Well, they're fracking California, right? I know they're fracking West Virginia, and they're fracking Pennsylvania. They're fracking they're fracking Ohio. And what they're not fracking, they're destroying to get sand to frack with. Witness the sand hills of Wisconsin blown to smithereens now. Using the same methodologies that are used in mountaintop removal. Oh, mountaintop removal, by the way. Now that we've got the Keystone XL pipeline stopped. Reckon could we maybe, you think, possibly look back toward beaten, bedraggled West Virginia? You see, there's this narrative that's been created that the coal industry here is dead and that they're not setting off any more blasts and that the trucks aren't running up and down the road loaded with coal and the trains aren't running out of the state to offload in places like Norfolk. But see, they are. It's still going on. The hillbillies are still being poisoned. And to be fair, I want to be fair about this. There's a lot of hillbillies that want to be poisoned, apparently, or are actively engaged in denying that they're being poisoned. But President Obama today made a statement about Keystone XL being the wrong thing, and about how we have to act now if we're going to preserve the planet's ability to support human life. I heard that clip and I thought, wait, is this a speech from 2007? Because there's not total consensus that we're okay, and if we can just stop burning hydrocarbons, say, you know, like 50, 75, 100 years from now, everything will be all right. And, of course, in addition to all of this, a little note of warning, or just awareness even. Some of these organizations have done a fantastic job of making it seem like coal is on the run. I know, me and coal, it's like Bob and coal, it's like a dog with an old bone. But see, coal is the problem. Do you realize that coal is dirtier than tar sands oil? Coal is far dirtier than frack gas. And it's toxic from the moment that it's mined, extracted, until well past its combustion. Witness sludge dams of ash. Reckon maybe we could get sort of turn our gaze back to that now. And I'm not trying to be mean. I'm as sincere as I can be when I say that I offer congratulations and thanks primarily to 350, but to ever so many other organizations. You know, the Rainforest Action Network has spoken out against Keystone XL. Hell, I've spoken. I'm speaking against Keystone XL now. Sierra Club's spoken against Keystone XL. Virtually every organization that is environmental has made a point of speaking against Keystone XL. And that's how victories are made. But here's the fact. The combustion of coal is not only not diminishing, it is sharply increasing. India, building coal-fired power plants left and right. China, still building them. Now, granted, they're putting up a lot of wind and solar, but they're still building them. And we have a political party in this country that thinks that that God would love us a little bit more if we would just put a few more coal-fired... I mean, the entire governmental structure of West Virginia and the new governmental structure of the governor's office of Kentucky thinks, well, if we could just build a coal-fired power plant next to everybody's house, we'd have prosperity. Daggone that Obama and his war on coal. I tell you what, that Kenyan Muslim you slurper living in our White House. Mercy sakes, he is inscrutable. I mean, it's bad enough what he done with his EPA, wanting to cut down on CO2 emissions and the like. But great googly moogly, to be able to get people to start a drilling and a fracking. So that we wouldn't be able to sell our coal and compete with frack gas. Oh, I tell you what, he's a sharp one. You can't turn your back on him. That's about how it goes, isn't it? Yeah. So that's my simple request. Whenever you hear something like, Lindsey Graham, just as an example, says, I would have an all of the above energy policy. We would have my cabinet full of men in the White House, and they'd be mint juleps all around.
while we figured out how we could use some oil and some gas and some coal and a little bit of wind and solar just to make them tree huggers happy and have us all of the above energy policy. Hold me, John. So coal isn't going away, hasn't gone away, and its combustion is increasing. You know, we talk about the Western Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere, and we like to think about, a sludge dam letting loose in Brazil and probably killing lots of people in the last day or so. No, we don't like to think about that at all. Or maybe we think about the deforestation of the Amazon rainforest. We don't tend to think about the fact that there's tons and tons and tons of coal coming out of Colombia. I think that would be the Drummond Coal Company of Birmingham, Alabama, among others. You know, it's Colombia where if you try to organize coal workers, they drag you out of your house in the middle of the night and put a bullet behind your ear at about 3,000 feet per second. Coal use is going up. And it is coal. Make no mistake, it is coal that more than any other substance is contributing to the increase in greenhouse gases that drives climate change. Bless his heart, Senator Sanders introduced the Keep It in the Ground Act related to drilling in federal lands. And I say, yay! I haven't seen the text of the bill, so maybe I'm wrong, but is it just about drilling? Or is it about mining? Oh, yeah, and something Brother Deacon Asa reminds me of. Hey, Bob, did you hear yesterday that the government of China has underreported China's use of coal by 17%? Yeah, I did see that, and thank you for reminding me. Which means that there is actually more carbon going into the atmosphere than previously thought, which means that we're in bigger trouble than we already knew we were. If you happen to live in reality world and side with the 97% of scientists who say that climate change is real and it's caused by, burning things like coal and which is done by humans and not the 3% of scientists who eat onion dip with lead paint chips. So that's my only request. That's my ask, as the parlance goes, that now that we've got one victory, we take everybody who was involved in it and turn and go and get another one. And it should be coal. It absolutely should be coal. Jim asked via email the other night, if I enjoyed the poetry, prose, and plain song over at Secret Sandwich Society, and I did immensely. And he asked, did you read some of your own stuff? And I said, I did. And in particular, this is what I read. Are you a friend of coal? If you aren't, why aren't you? I'm Joe Manchin, and I'm a friend of coal. I don't love coal at all. I curse it. I curse it for the curse coal itself has been on my state, my family, my ancestors, my friends, and my neighbors. I curse it in the names of more than 100,000 workers it killed in Appalachia over the last century. I curse it in the names of the 1,000 coal workers who still die every year from black lung. I curse it in the names of 29 men incinerated beyond recognition as human at Upper Big Branch. I curse it in the names of 13 human beings slaughtered for profit at Sago. I curse it for Monongah and Eccles and Farmington and every unnamed slate fall on white damp death and black damp death and drowning and electrocution. I curse it in the names of my great-grandfather and grandfather and hundreds of thousands of men who worked like draft animals and weren't even paid in money. I curse it in the names of widows sleeping alone in an empty bed for the rest of their lives. I curse it in the names of the boys who had no choice but to follow their daddies down the hole because West Virginia politicians were so far down deep, not in the mines, but in the pockets of the bosses. I curse it in the names of the little girls who had no choice but to marry one of those boys and see the whole sad, poisonous, mortal process unravel in yet another generation and another and another. I curse it in the names of the innocents who breathe particles of death itself every day in Appalachian hollers huddled under hellscapes. I curse it in the names of babies whose bodies are deformed by blasting poisons that violate the sweet sanctity of their mommy's wombs. I curse it in the names of cancer patients who would never have been cancer patients had they not lived near the blasting and the dust and the filth. I curse it, and I curse the executives and the shareholders and the investment bankers who blithely profit from Appalachian agony without so much as a second thought. And cursing it, I say simply, enough. That's about how I feel. Because it is a curse. It's not just a curse on Appalachia. It's a curse on everywhere it goes. It's a curse on every community where it's burned. It's a curse to every child who walks around with a goddamn inhaler in their pocket because they can't breathe the air without stopping breathing. Yeah. Because you know what? If we turned all of that energy that stopped the Keystone XL pipeline, if we turned all of that grassroots energy to eliminating mountaintop removal, it would be over by the end of the year. Okay, by the end of next year. This is a victory. And we need another one. Nothing support. Well, it's like bowling. You know, you step up in the first frame and you roll a strike. And you step up in the second frame and you throw a three and then a gutter ball. You have just worked up your strike righteously. Yeah. So while we celebrate the defeat of the Keystone XL pipeline, I hope we understand that it was a skirmish and not the war itself. I sincerely do. But enough of that. I mean, we do, after all, have a bill in Congress that would end mountaintop removal. And would shine a spotlight on the toxicity of all these blasting practices that, for instance, are poisoning a future generation in New Auburn, Wisconsin. Where I have seen trains that are miles long loaded with frack sand that has been blasted out of those lovely hills. Mm-hmm. Yep, the bill's there. All it needs is the popular pressure to push it along. But that's that. How about some other stuff before? And just a reminder,
we have a billable Rick's challenge got met and met again. And with that, we have another $50 challenge on the table, anonymously placed, that hopefully will be met again and doubled down and pressed down and shaken together until we can get to that $385 mark. Thank you, Sylvia. Thank you, Sylvia, very kindly for becoming one of the subscribers we've been seeking. We really appreciate it, Sylvia. Thank you. Sylvia's there listening every evening. Thank you very kindly for helping us keep it going. It is, after all, when you sign up for when you sign up for a $10 monthly contribution, you're paying about less than 17 cents per hour of programming, which is, I'd say, a bargain. I think it is. Thank you, Sylvia. Hopefully more folks will join in. And again, if we can get past that $385 mark, I will apply the rest to Chris's equipment fund challenge, which stands at $165. Thank you, Sister Carol. Well, I asked the question a couple of days ago when it became apparent that what roughly works out to about 16% of the eligible voters of the Commonwealth of Kentucky stand had elected Matt Bevin's governor. Matt Bevin, there's no S. I asked if those, did Kentuckians understand that their ability to go to the doctor when they were sick was on the line? Were they too sick to go to the polls? Yeah, I don't know. How many people who, for the first time in their lives, have health care went and voted for Matt Bevin because of that Obama's war on coal? I don't necessarily know the answer to that. But I surmise that it is a statistically real number. But Matt Bevin is not wasting any time, because he knows what matters down in the Commonwealth of Kentucky stand. What matters in the Commonwealth of Kentucky stand? Well, Kim, Sister Clark Kim Davis matters in Kentucky stand. Mm-hmm. And so Matt Bevin has made clear that religious liberty is going to be high on his agenda, because he announced, today that when he becomes the governor of the great Commonwealth of Kentucky stand, one of the first things he's going to do is he's going to change the state merge licenses. In the Capitol Rotunda there in Frankfort, he said, "One thing I will take care of right away is we will remove the names of the county clerks from the marriage form." Huh. Wonder whose authority they will be signed under then. Will they be under Matt Bevin's authority? Or will he just say issued, like Sister Clark Kim Davis did, that it was issued under protest because of the ruling of the liberal activist Judge Bunning, who is, of course, a deeply conservative Republican. Dunno. And he's going to do it by one of them executive orders that I thought Republicans just hated. Hmm? Because, of course, Sister Clark Kim Davis has deeply held, for at least the last year or so, Christian beliefs outweigh anybody's constitutional rights. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, I understand that there is some question as to the legality of Matt Bevin's election, but, I mean, the voting irregularities, I think Brad had something on that. But I'm operating under the assumption that he will become governor of Kentucky. Apparently, somebody has told him that it might not be the smartest thing in the world for him to take away the health care of 500,000 Kentuckians. Maybe health care will become okay once that one in our White House, the Kenyan Muslim usurper, is gone. What do you think? Yeah, the video game voting machines were not at all copacetic. Right. Oh, now, daggummit, Carol Baker, there's an idea. Instead of looking for alliteration, maybe we've been looking in the wrong place all along. The 400 Club. Oh, now. The 400 Club. Named in honor of former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson. That's a thought. Then again, I don't know that I want to be associated with that. No. He might have some sort of copyright on the word the and the word club, and the next thing you know, we're litigating. Hey, one last little fun thing before we fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, because I've already got the bumper set up for this. And you know how I feel about missing a good bumper opportunity. Common Core. We were talking about Common Core just in the last couple of nights, weren't we? About how the idea behind Common Core is to make sure that a child in a civilized state or commonwealth, that the education that child receives, that a child, say, going to school in an uncivilized state like Mississippi or Alabama, or West by Coal, Virginia, Stan, that you are not cursed by birth in one of those godforsaken right-wing states. And so a child should have an equal opportunity to do a same or similar education as a child in a civilized state or commonwealth. This, of course, the Republicans despise. This is conservatives, teabaggers, birchers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birthers, booger eaters. They despise that because you've got to keep the people stupid if you want to keep them voting, you know, teabaggy. Well, down in Alabama, it was late last month when a member of the Alabama School Board delivered some remarks to the Coffee County Republican Women's. We're talking, of course, about Betty Peters. Well, with Common Core in place, I bet he does, too. Never mind. Peterbilt, how's yours? Smoke a turd in hell for that one. No, Betty Peters gave an address to the Coffee County Republican women about the demonism that is Common Core. Mm-hmm. And she's real upset about it. And she laid it out there on the table for the Republican women of Coffee County. Mm-hmm. She said, "I understand Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi are the three southern states targeted by the radical left homosexualists to change our students' perspective. We have gone past gay, lesbian, and bisexual, which apparently she was okay with. No, not at all. We have gone past gay, lesbian, and bisexual, and now we're into gender fluid spectrum. Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center is going to be developing your children or grandchild or neighbor's children into little social activists for social justice, as they define it, or else transgender stuff.
Oh, dear. What's wrong with being a social activist for social justice? Well, see, to a birch or a bagger, a death or a ninth or a tenth or birth or death or booger eater, Republican, libertarian, tea bagger, whatever. That's left wing code for commie. And you want to hear what Betty Peters already knows about how Common Core is twisting Alabama?
Mm-hmm. The students are given color crayons,
and honestly, even that goofy ass crayon that was color, that was flesh color. Yeah, who? What? I've never seen anybody, white folks, not with skin that color. It has mercifully gone now. But are there non-color crayons? Are there transparent crayons? Crayons non-reflective of light? They are given color crayons and two handouts. Well, see, right there, handouts. You got to understand, we can't be having no handouts, or they'll just become dependent upon the state for handouts, and they'll live in their welfare hammocks and expect free stuff. The students are given color crayons and two handouts. The students are supposed to color the photos of the clothes they want to wear. Michael and Madison, are you listening? Because you're going to know what the bumper is in about 5 seconds. The students are supposed to color the photos of the clothes they want to wear. You will notice these are called outfits. I have never asked my son or my husband what outfit they are going to wear. This is just crazy. I think all this stuff is mainly written by wacky feminists. Not the seriously unfunny feminists, but the wacky feminists. You know, the ones with the big floppy shoes and the red noses and the wah-wah with the horns and the whoopee cushions and rubber chicken. The wacky feminists. No, really, she said that. You have to run for the Alabama Board of Education, and continuing in her remarks, otherwise known as barely intelligible, half marginally sane rant. As I said when I first campaigned, and I've said it every time since, dear Jesus, she's been reelected. We need to get back to the basics. Reading, writing, and arithmetic from first grade on. The educators in the Horn Family Commune congregation are presently kicking furniture and their feet are hurting. Because apparently down in Alabama, they and in them Common Core states, they ain't teaching no reading, writing, and arithmetic from first grade on. And that's all you get, is reading, writing, and arithmetic from first grade on. Down there in Alabama, graduating honors class senior, and you're still sitting there going, and that's a two, and let me see, dang, I hope we don't go over 10, I'll have to take your shoes off again, and a one, and three goes into, and teacher, I'm lost. We need to be teaching the C part. The C part? Is that like the C word? I don't even use that word. Oh, which is Christian values. Oh, sorry. Not Muslim values. Not transgender values. We need to be teaching the old biblical values.
Well, you know what? We had a story of those old biblical values just, what, last night? The woman who was thrown, the woman aged somewhere between 19 and 21, Roxana was her name, who was thrown in a pit in Afghanistan and stoned to death, just like it says to do in the Bible when you catch an adulterous female. We need to be teaching the old biblical values. Our nation has gone to Gomorrah, and it's up to us to turn it around. There are enough voters out there who think like we do. God, I hope not. And we have just got to take our cheering back. Stand up. Don't be afraid of upsetting the school. The schools can't even exist without students. It's your responsibility to shield your child and preserve his or her innocence as long as you can. You know, preserve your child's innocence until your Baptist minister has a chance to bugger them real good. Ron in the Unfrozen North noting, social activists for social justice? Sounds like another term for Christianity. I still like Mark Twain's observation. There has been only one Christian. They caught him and crucified him early. I know, Carol, I know. Carol's a little amazed. They ask him what kind of outfit they want to wear. Carol says, not fabulous dresses. Outfit is too gender neutral. Wait a minute. Doesn't the Bible demand that women remain silent? Somebody dig a hole in the ground down around Op and put Betty Peters in it and stone her. And then this, because she, Betty Peters, that he does. She's lost in this here modern world. She wants to take our country back because she loves Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now today, forever indivisible under God. She says, they're not teaching the way we learnt. And golly, we did pretty well with our old math. Now, I'm of a certain age. Okay, 52. And I can remember starting school. It seems just like yesterday. And I can remember complaints of the adults back then saying, this new math is plumb beyond me. And all we knew is we were being taught math. Some better than others, apparently. They are not teaching the way we learned. And golly, we did pretty well with our old math. We got to the moon, done a lot of medical research. Don't! Yeah, they did fine with the old math, but not the old English. My God! We got to the moon, done a lot of medical research, making movies, all sorts of stuff. I've tried to get it changed, and I will continue to try to get it changed, because this is something that the parents cannot help their child with. Apparently nobody helped Betty Peters with her English. Nobody helped her done her English. Wonder how she did when she took in the ACT. And I don't know. I still think if she takes to teaching the C part in school, that's going to raise the R of the, and that's the R. That's I R E R. It's going to raise the R of the fine, upstanding, God fearing Christian family values, folks. All right. There I was. I thought I was just being playful, and I've done offended Michael in Madison. Subject line: don't call what you're playing a bumper. Come on, Bob, 5 seconds? Give me more credit than that. I knew what the bumper was before you'd finished enunciating the first syllable of the word. I kind of knew you would. Thank you, Jim. Jim says, Dear Bob, again, I'm listening hard. If you don't believe it, look out your window. No. And I won't go into the basement either. Also a great and moving read on the evil of coal. Thank you, Jim. Thank you very kindly. Jim asks, how was it received? It was received quite well. It was received quite well. All right, so it is time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. If you would like to participate and you never have, send a contact request on Skype, which is very easy to use. Send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, and Sparky, who has, for yea verily lo, these many, many years been the moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, will get you into the group and into the conversation before you even, well, before you can say boo. Mm-hmm. We have the stress line, which at present is occupied, but that's available also along the way. We are making progress toward. The fundraising goal this evening. We have $165 to go on the equipment fund challenge, and we have. Oh, wait a minute. Daggummit. Carry the gravy. See, I didn't do so good at the old math. Maybe I need the new math. Let's see. We are $125 away with a $50 challenge remaining on the table. We're $125 away from finishing fundraising for the week. So, I don't know. Can we do that much in one evening? I don't know, but it sure would be nice. And it would be nice if folks would jump in alongside Sylvia and sign up for a monthly subscription. That's awfully helpful. Anyway, it's time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And some of you, well, probably more than Michael and Madison, if David in South Carolina is listening, I know he knows what this bumper is. This is the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. I never said I'm Bob Kincaid yet, did I? Well, I am.
You want to grow up to paint houses like me, a trailer in my yard till you're 23. You want to feel old after 42 years, keep dropping the hammer and grinding the gears. Well, I used to go out in a Mustang, a 302 Mach 1 in green. Me and your mama made you in the back, and I sold it to buy her a ring. And I learned not to say much, nothing, so I figure you already know. But in case you don't or maybe forgot, I'll lay it out real nice and slow. Don't call what you wear in an outfit. Don't ever say your car is broke. Don't worry about losing your accent. A southern man tells better jokes. Have fun and stay clear of the needle. Call home on your sister's birthday. Don't tell him you're bigger than Jesus. Don't give it away. Don't give it away. 5 years in a St. Florian foundry. They call it industrial park. Then hospital maintenance and tech school, just to memorize frigid air parts. But I got to missing your mama, and I got to missing you too. And I went back to painting for my old man, and I guess that's what I'll always do. So don't let them take who you are, boy. Don't try to be who you ain't. And don't let me catch you in Kendall with a bucket of wealthy man's paint. Don't act like your family's a joke. Have fun, stay clear of the needle. Call home on your sister's birthday. Don't tell her you're bigger than Jesus. Don't give it away. Don't give it away.
Yeah, from his drive-by trucker days, Jason Isbell, and a very, well, to drive-by trucker fans and Jason Isbell fans, well-known tune called Outfit. So you could probably never get Betty Peters to admit it, but I suspect she's a closet truckers fan, or at least maybe a closet Jason fan. I mean, she certainly wouldn't tell them down to the First Baptist Church and herpetological sanctuary, but because that was when that came out on what, the Decoration Day album, and it I don't know, maybe Jason picked it up somewhere along the way. I don't know. But it was the first time I'd ever heard it, but it made a sort of Southern sense. And by the way, Jason Isbell, I mean, you know, only one of the finest songwriting talents in the country today. Of course, so are Mike Cooley and Patterson Hood of the Truckers. But, wow. The idea that Betty Peters is somewhere along the way turned the word outfit into a right wing screed about Common Core. I don't know if the universe can stand that much chaos, but it is Friday on the front porch, and thanks going out to Mike for jumping in alongside Sylvia with a subscription this evening. I'm going to count subscriptions up over the weekend so that I'll know exactly how far we have to go. But I know that we don't think we ever even got to the 250, let alone the 200. So we've got a ways to go. Marty asking, a Jason fan? Does this person have a hockey mask fetish? Wrong, Jason. Get with the program, Marty. This is awesome music. But let's go over and check in with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable this evening. We have a first-class group together. We always do. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How in the world are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I've been doing my winterizing around the house, so to speak.
And I noticed it's Friday on the front porch, so you can't be in the man cave.
No, I've been rolling up hoses and stuff. I could try to be in the man cave, but now the man cave has another problem. Let's see, go on the other way. It gets cold in there as the sun goes down now.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, after all, it is a 20-foot by 40-foot metal building. And if there's no sun on the metal, it gets cold really quick.
And probably not a lot of insulation or...
No, none.
Oh, that would be zero. I can do that much math.
you can see the you see the corrugated metal. I mean, it's all it's just you know truss walls and then the corrugated metal wrapped around with a side door and a north door. You know, faces out towards the north door faces straight out to the pasture and the south. The west door looks west, of course, but I can still see the pasture from there.
No smoke in the air tonight, I trust?
Nobody's building fires too much yet in the fireplace. It's still early. I mean, they'll wait till tonight.
Well, when I think about when I think about smoke in California, I'm generally not thinking about hearth fires. I mean, I'm just glad California's not on fire at the moment.
No, we've had
you've had rain.
We had rain last weekend,
and if I'm not mistaken,
there's snow on the mountains again.
Wow! And there was a rainbow. That did you see the rainbow? Did everybody in Los Angeles see the rainbow photograph, Rick?
No, I haven't, Bob. Hey, by the way, great show so far.
Well, thank you very kindly, and thank you for the thank you for the challenge and the bonus, as it were.
Well, there you go. It would have been more if I didn't have so many dang bills to pay myself, you know, Bob?
Believe me, I know a little bit about bills. I absolutely
do.
When you guys got the rain with the thunder and the lightning, then and poor Tim from L.A. was so scared, he ran under his bed. He crawled under it. He can't run under it. But no, there was this beautiful photograph that I saw online later that showed... It was L.A. shot from the mountains, and it showed a rainbow encapsulating L.A. from one side to the other, as if the entirety of Los Angeles was under a rainbow, which it was.
Wow. Well, we truly are the city of angels, Bob, because that's God's promise, right?
Absolutely. But you know what? When you're living in a place that's beset with drought, being reminded that... That the God of Abraham has promised not to destroy you by flooding it rings a little, it thumps a little hollow, doesn't it?
I think the goddess of irony has been at it again.
I tell you what, we go through about a box of rubber chickens a week sacrificing here.
time to reorder.
Yeah, no kidding. Hi, Alex. 2 weeks in a row.
Hi, everybody. Guess what?
What?
I was at a doctor's appointment today. And I live in Arizona, and I was in an area where there's a lot of oldsters that go see their docs. So I went to the office, and I'm sitting in the waiting room, and there's this woman that walks in. I guess she's in her 70s. She's sprightly, but older, and she sits down. She's wearing a sweatshirt, and emblazoned on the front of her sweatshirt is a gun, like a handgun, with the American flag, the stars and stripes on the American flag, on the gun decal on her sweatshirt right there. And I was sitting there and looking at her and sitting there and stewing and thinking. And then I looked a little bit more at her face, and I noticed earrings dangling from her ears, little pistols dangling from her ears. It took every ounce of whatever I have not to say something to her. And I...
To get arrested. Yes.
Hey, Alex, did she have a pink pistol stuffed in between a brassiere?
I didn't see anything.
Well, what you had there was an authentic frontier fundamentalist.
She was carrying...
Remember I told you guys a few months ago that I went to the bakery and there was that older guy carrying a piece on his hip?
You're right.
And I was hysterical and upset. Well, there's actually I posted it on Facebook. There's an incredibly brilliant article about what to do when you're in a situation like that, but it's a great article, and it said, check this out. If you're in a restaurant, even if you're ordering something, if there's money involved, get up, stop what you're doing, go over to the owner or whatever and say, I am leaving this establishment because there's somebody here with a gun, and and this is a safety issue. I'm afraid for my life and my family's life.
Yep.
And slowly just walk out of the establishment. And that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. And tell them, you know, be very clear. I'm not walking out on the bill. I will come back and pay it when it is safe to be in here and there's not some idiot with a gun.
Can you believe it's come down to this? That this is what my I have to adapt a new way of being in my environment now.
America in the 21st century.
Unbelievable. And there's Ben Carson bumper stickers all over the place here.
Well, let me
retirement communities. What do you expect?
But well, is there just some threshold you pass where you become paranoid and fearful? I mean, which birthday is that? I mean, I know anniversaries are like rock, paper, scissors, and stuff like that. But which one's the birthday where you get the gun because you're a paranoid, pasty faced, doughy white person? I got a little story, and this is not a happy story. This is a horrifying story. This is what the gun culture gets you. When I was a kid growing up, the state senator for the area where I grew up was a man named Nelson Starkey. And he held that position for a very long time and never got indicted or anything that I know of. Yeah, that's a good thing. He had a son who was roughly contemporaneous with my age, and the son had a son, and so that would be the grandson. And this is public knowledge, so I mean it's been published and everything, so I'm not divulging any confidences or anything. Rivers Starkey, 22 years old and probably a junior or a senior at the University of Alabama, had gone down to down to Florida on a break, fall break, I guess. And he'd gone in the company of a friend, and they were I think Santa Rosa County, yeah, a place called Navarre, Florida. And he and his friend had gone to visit the friend's auntie. And while there, a conversation ensued between the friend and young Mr. Starkey and a 59-year-old by the name of John Marshall Fitzgerald. At one point in time, John Marshall Fitzgerald went and picked up the phone, dialed 911, and said, "I just shot somebody," and then hung up the phone. When the police arrived, it was the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office, they found young Rivers Starkey lying on the front porch and bleeding so heavily they couldn't even find where he'd been shot. One deputy looks at John Marshall Fitzgerald and says, "Where's he shot at?" Well, he'd shot him twice in the head. No additional information about what went on can be released. The night before the shooting, they went to dinner. And then the next night, they went back, and they were having drinks with John Marshall Fitzgerald in his den while his wife was out. And AL.com reports, this is a quote, "According to Rivers' friend, as the night progressed, Mr. Fitzgerald became increasingly verbally abusive to Rivers. At first, he appeared to be joking and then became more personal and abusive in his remarks. Rivers became upset and an argument ensued, at which time Fitzgerald left the room, returning with a gun and screaming obscenities. Mr. Fitzgerald then pointed the gun at the head of Rivers' friend and threatened his life if he did not leave immediately. The friend ran out the front door, believing that Rivers was behind him. As he ran, he heard shots." And doctors treating the young man say that Rivers was grazed on the right thigh by one shot and that the bullet that struck his elbow was deflected into the right side of his head. The third round was a direct shot to the left side of the head. He is struggling and clinging to life in an intensive care unit in Pennsylvania, or in Pensacola, as we speak. And there's a GoFundMe crowdfunding campaign going on to raise money to help his parents in the course of having to go back and forth from Northwest Alabama to Pensacola to be with their son. And, you know, because freedom. And I'm not trying to be flip. This is hard. I mean, every firearm maiming, every firearm injury, every firearm death in this country is preventable. And so when little old ladies, and I didn't do this to just be a total downer to the conversation, Alex, but when little old ladies show up at the doctor's office wearing a gun flag T-shirt and little gun earrings, there's a direct connection between those attitudes and that right there. It would be wrong to, I mean, there's nothing, the police report's published, but all of the details of what the argument was about or anything is redacted. But
they're all part of the same group.
Yeah.
All of them are part and parcel of the same exact group, from the granny wearing the gun thing to the crazy guy shooting. I mean, they're all in the same group.
They're part of the same problem.
Part of the same problem, part of the same dynamic. Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. And hey, let me bring on the stress line. We got Jim over on the stress line. You still there, Jim?
Yeah, man. I thought you forgot about me, bud.
I didn't forget about you. Just got to get the preliminaries done.
No. What was I going to say? I love the I love the 400 Club idea by Carol. That's real cool. I think that's great. But
well, it may be what it winds up being. And by the way, since you mentioned it, let me see. I got some gazettas to do. So that's 100. We've got dadgummit math. Gerald has helped out. Let's see, 86 dollars and 2 cents left on fundraising, and $165 left on the equipment fundraiser. So,
oh, Bob, about
thank
the money,
you. To,
I'm having PayPal problems with everything, so I'm going to ditch the PayPal, and I just decided I'm going to get a money order times 12 months, and I'm going to have them made for $10 or more a month, and just send one a month.
That would be lovely, Alex. Thank you.
Because the PayPal, and for another person I was contributing to, that's not, for some reason, I'm having problems, and I'm not the only one. So if anyone's having problems with PayPal, you can do what I just thought of, getting a money order or something in advance and just sending it out every month.
That would be great. And thank you to Jack. Who kicked in, and thank you to Joan as well. We are down to 3602, and that's pretty amazing. So the anonymous challenge has been met as well, which is awesome.
Oh, and I just want to let you know, Bob, I'm getting my color coordinated socialist outfit ready. You know, what you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, right. Outfit.
Yeah. When I was thinking about that, I was thinking about that they had that thing. Maybe you were talking about it the other day. Somebody was that play they had, Joseph and the Technicolor Raincoat or something like that, one of Jesus' followers. That was his dad, right?
Yep.
What, he was looking for attention or something?
No, that was Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat, not raincoat.
Oh.
Not a lot of rain over there, Jim. I mean,
I think that was Joseph's way of trying to come out, being so flamboyant, you know?
Oh,
you know, that could explain why his brothers threw him in a pit.
There you go.
Might also explain why he didn't want to. They didn't want to jump the bones of Potiphar's wife, Potiphar.
See, we finally got down to the nitty gritty.
See, God hates fags. That's true, as old Fred Phelps used to say.
And his daughter.
God not rest his soul, I should say.
Yep. Maybe Shirley can follow in short order. Oh, and happy birthday, Alex.
Thank you, 57, y'all.
You know, for a New York woman, you say that y'all with real aplomb. I got a little golf clap for that.
Thank y'all.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, I started down south for a second.
Yeah, laissez les bon temps rouler, right, Jim?
Let the good times roll, baby.
I'm sorry, Alex. Go ahead.
I just said keep on trucking.
That too. Yeah. Jay Cruzen's joining us this evening. I think.
Yep, I'm present.
There he is. I saw. You know, I had that story last night about the kerfuffle over sea level rise in one of the Florida House subcommittee meetings. And there was this picture of high tide in South Florida, and I thought immediately of you because of the photos you've shared in the past.
Yeah, I've got some more too. Not any quite that dramatic. I've always been working out on the west side of Broward County here while we've been having the king tides, which seem to be lasting a lot longer than normal this year. But anyway,
and that's a thing. That's a word. I learned that word in reading a king tide.
Yeah, all it means is the highest high tides of the year, and it goes for like 3 months or whatever.
But in the past, has it meant that cars were driving through water up to their halfway up the doors?
Not quite so much as this year.
Okay, I kind of thought as much.
Nah, there is some other stuff to that. Some forces pulling on the tide between the sun and the moon, and we had that blood moon that was timed perfectly with that, and it's a mixture of things. But most of all, it's just sea level rise. And I caught that episode last night on a rebroadcast because I was working into the wee hours of the morning and got off at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it sure was.
Oh, just had an email come from the marvelous, back that up too, marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan. She said, the K-State University community got an email today saying that committees have been formed to decide what to do to comply with the Kansas law to allow concealed carry. The 2013 legislature enacted a statute to prevent state and municipal entities from prohibiting the concealed carry of handguns by eligible individuals into state and municipal buildings. The Board of Regents applied for an allowable 4-year exemption for our campus, and it expires on July the 1st, 2017. I'm not entirely clear as to what our choices are because the email implied that we would have to comply with state law unless the state accepts an amendment. Can't wait. Diane says, guns on campus. Yeah, that'll be great. I guess
nice, Kansas, too.
Nice addition.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
what could possibly go wrong with guns on a college campus with all those raging hormones and the drinking and, smoking of, various things, and the sniff and the snorting of various substances?
Some
professor or somebody might get outraged because their funding got cut because the state cut them off because of Brownback.
Yeah, and a student might say, you gave me an F, I deserve an A. Bang, bang.
Yeah, and that's always the way it is, and I bet Diane could speak to this too. In college or, well, in high school, whatever. Did you ever notice it's I got an A, but he gave me an F?
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't do the gun conversation, though, man, because out of all the hot topics we've had over the past 20, 30 years, what has been the hottest one and had the most regression?
That guns. One.
So I just tune it out anymore. I can't do it. I'm sorry.
Oh, by the way, Bob.
Yes.
You were asking what the keep in the ground bill was.
Yes.
It's oil, gas, coal, anything carbon. It's on federal lands. It isn't.
It's not just drilling.
No.
Oh, good. Well, hallelujah.
Anything for the lease. If they're not using the lease, they're going to lose the lease.
Mm-hmm. And no leases, no new leases to be issued. All old ones will be let to expire. No extensions. It's just federal lands, though. But that's a hell of a good start.
Federal lands are quite voluminous, let's just say. They cover lots of the U.S., especially the western states, if anybody's traveled out west before.
But what about the jobs?
You can get more jobs from solar and wind than you can from drilling.
You know that, and I know that. Explain that to the fossil fools.
Christ, you can almost throw a rock and hit a solar energy installer truck out here. When you're driving down the road, man, you see them all the time.
It's just like Bob when you were talking about Periodic was talking about how in your part of the country, West Virginia, they can't accept the reality that there are better options than the coal gas mill.
Yeah, well, Jim, I mean, consider that I can drive 2 miles down to the local Rippy Mart, and down there, in either pink or black, I can buy me a T-shirt or a hoodie, okay? And in white letters across it, in great big letters, it merely says coal, C-O-A-L. But on the back, it says, "About all I know is mining coal."
And that reminds me of another thing. I used to know a friend of mine. I used to know this guy. He was a friend of mine, and he worked at Phoenician, where I used to work. And he was an officer. He was a volunteer cop. He'd ride around with two regular cops. But anyway, somehow we were talking about, like, just the... he didn't carry a gun, but we're talking about, and he'd have to go to the firing range and shoot. But I'd read an article about how poisonous lead is. I mean, because I know that's kind of like one of the things that screwed up ancient Rome, was they used lead in their pipes and kind of made a lot of people go crazy. And he was even telling me about how, you know, he was very careful about when he would go to target practice or whatever, you know. But even the slightest touch of lead, you know, that's pretty poisonous. And, I mean, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But is that what you understand?
Fairly close, yeah.
You can actually tie that to a dramatic decrease in violent crime from the time that we took lead out of our gasoline to now. And that's actually been documented. So once we stopped burning the leaded gasoline, there was a huge drop in violent crime. Talking about the way lead affects people.
Yes, I've definitely heard that thesis, Jason. There probably is something to that. Plus, the regulations to prohibit lead paint in houses. I mean, you used to have, I think you had, you know, a lot more developmental issues. You know, although I don't know, with autism on the rise, that's hard to say that's necessarily a fact there.
I'm going to tie that one to Monsanto because of some of the research I've heard. Of course, nothing definitive yet, but stay tuned.
Well, let's tag them with it. Why not? They deserve it.
Well, I think it goes to glyphosate.
Yeah, that's right. Glyphosate, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know what they do to the wheat crops now, so that they can have a crisper and faster harvest. you know, they spray them with freaking Roundup right before, like 3 or 4 days before they get ready to harvest, so they have a nice, crisp, and so then we eat it all.
Oh, geez. 3 to 4 days before the harvest? That's insane.
That's correct. Just so it starts dying off and getting all nice and crisp, and it makes it easier to harvest.
Wait, I thought the wheat was genetically Roundup resistant.
No. Not the wheat.
That's the corn. Sorry.
Now that's all the other crops. They don't do that to the wheat. And somebody's saying, I got to find whoever does the research. I heard her on a different radio program, and she's talking about the way it genetically affects the plants could actually also be going into us too. And it's a whole long thing, but possible ties to autism and Alzheimer's. So stay tuned.
And probably Parkinson's.
And I'll try to dig that up.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, if they're going to spray, you know, Roundup on the wheat that I eat 3 to 4 days before the harvest, maybe I should start eating the Chemlawn-treated grass of my neighbor's front lawn.
Why do that, Rick? Why don't you just get the Roundup and guzzle it down, glug, glug, glug. You know, save yourself the mastication process, you know.
There you go. Just, you know, hey, just make it more direct, right?
IV, right?
Oh, my God.
Oh, jeez.
We are doing a huge experiment on not just the, you know, the planet and just so many different ways between, you know, global warming and what we're doing to the other aspects of the environment. And, it just makes me so sad, you know?
Oh, just had a note in, Alex, you'll be interested in this. Just had a note in from Roger up in Oregon. About the lady in the waiting room there. Roger. Subject line: entry for the Small World Club. I think that was my friend Fran that Alex saw in the waiting room. She doesn't believe in any of that crap. She only puts that stuff on when she's going to the doctor to get her prescriptions renewed. Says it cuts down on all those invasive, time-consuming questions her doctor used to ask before re-upping her pain and antipsychotics meds. The sweatshirt and earrings turn out to have been a real good investment. By the way, she's only 53, but lived next to a Coke chemical plant for about 20 years.
Well, by the way, Bob, that was a pain clinic where people go in to get narcotics.
You know, and you know what? Then it's maybe it really is Roger's buddy, Fran.
God.
Oh, by the way, going back to the bumper there, that was outfit by the truckers, Jason, had a tweet from Haley. Haley said, talk about a Friday flashback. Jason Isbell in his DBT days. I have that album on vinyl. And it really is a great one. I was going to mention something along the way, just some of the stuff that I've got for general discussion. Turns out throwing students out of their desks is a thing. We remember the case out of South Carolina, right?
Right.
So this case is out of Illinois, and it actually happened a little while back. But via the Free Thought Project, a woman named Jacqueline Pizzera has filed a civil rights lawsuit in federal court against two campus police officers at the College of DuPage. Okay. She had been outside before class having a cigarette. And a cop came up and told her, you're not allowed to smoke on this campus. Smoking is dangerous. Okay. This would be Officer Vallardes. And he verbally warned the whole group for smoking on campus. And then he asked them for identification. And she said, well, I accepted your warning, and she put out her cigarette and began walking to class. And then he called for backup and followed her into philosophy class. And Officer Tamarino was then with Sergeant Vallardes, Officer Vallardes. I'm guessing at those two L's, okay? And Vallardes then screamed at the professor, is that your student? And the professor said, "Well, sir, under the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, FERPA, I am prohibited from revealing the name of my students." So then Tamarino walks over to Jacqueline Pizarro and says, "I want to see your ID." And she hands him her student ID that has the photo and the expiration date on it. And he then said, "You're under arrest for trespassing." So they grabbed her arms, you know, and the professor began to record the incident on his phone. So the cops knock over her desk, slam her to the floor, and begin handcuffing her as she's screaming in pain. And they start hollering, as cops often do, "Stop resisting!" And she said, "You're hurting me! Stop resisting!" Jacqueline Pizarro later said, "I had two fully grown men on my back pushing me into the ground, and he said in the video, 'If you can talk, you can breathe.' He picked me up and slammed me into the ground harder." Apparently he was offended by her breathing. Breathing is now resisting. And then Velardes threatened to taser the professor for videoing him. After which he confiscated the phone. Wow.
When are we going to do something about this epidemic of police violence?
He confiscated the phone of a student recording it, didn't realize the professor was recording it. He was going to try to get away with it.
So this recording is out there?
Sure is. Hang on a minute. Let me see if I can...
Drop a link.
Stand by.
IBSD.
Damn it. I hate the ads. Just a second. It'll be gone. Oh, for pity's sakes. They did charge her with resisting arrest and obstructing a peace officer, but 10 months later the charges were dropped.
You know, Bob, if you subscribe, the ads will go away.
Subscribe to what?
I don't know.
Adblock.
That's angry. Angry's in a wind tunnel.
Oh, okay. Hey, okay.
I just muted him for a minute. I'll talk to him backline.
Yeah, it'll resolve in a second. The miracle of Skype. All right, so maybe we're done. Hang on. Let's see if we can get this. No, it's just it's some talking head talking about it. Never mind. Not worth bothering. But
is it for the story, Bob?
It's over at the Free Thought Project.
I was going to say the thing about them dropping it. Believe it or not, I've been arrested once or twice, and you can get a charge. It'll be dropped, but it can just be brought up with any time within I think a year or two, and then you get a letter in the mail about being charged again.
So, Jack, you're saying they renewed the charges, basically, a year later?
Jim.
Yeah, I had that happen.
Oh, Jim, I'm sorry.
I had that happen because it was like, okay, I went to court. They didn't call me. I went to talk. Okay, what happened? They didn't call me. Said, well, your charges would probably be dropped because it was possession of the phenobarbital in my pocket. And then, like, 6 months later... Next thing, okay, I got re-indicted. I guess a new ADA or a new, DA or whatever. And then I went down and, fled my case and I got the case dismissed. But they can drop it, but they have a certain amount, they have like a year or two. And, you can accidentally miss the mail or something like that. That's what I was thinking. But you gotta watch that stuff.
Yeah, you sure do.
Oh, by the way, don't speak, it's generally understood that the friendliest state in the union is Minnesota, right? I mean, that's right. Everybody knows that phrase, Minnesota nice. Well, apparently everybody isn't. Jody Marie Burchard Risch, according to KARE-TV, 43 years old, was having dinner at Applebee's when she heard someone speaking a language that she did not like or understand. And she was enraged by the woman who was speaking the foreign language. The victim's name is Asma Jama. And she said, I was sitting, turned around like this, and all of a sudden I feel something thrown on my face. Boom! My cousin started screaming and everyone wanted to run away. Well, Jody Marie Burchard Risch had thrown a drink in Asma Jama's face and then smashed her beer mug across her face in a roundhouse punch before she ran away because the woman was speaking Swahili. Oh, doing that Muslim talking.
Well, and this is a current one. I mean, I was, you know, it brought me immediately to that older one. I forget what language they were using, but the same thing.
Islamic! Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize. Yeah, you are here, Jack. Cool. I didn't see you. Yeah. I didn't see you come in. Wonderful.
But, yeah, I, you know, all the kind of the hate speech and the, all that, kind of, it's almost like it's giving permission, you know, for somebody to freak out like that, or it gives them an excuse or something, you know. It seems like the people that do that want to do it anyway, even if it wasn't, you know, a thing.
You're absolutely right, Jack. I think what happens is first it starts with the speech, and then that triggers the thoughts, and then that triggers the action, you know, like racist action. I mean, that's the I think that's the natural progression, unfortunately. And that's why it's so hurtful for, you know, to the society for us to be, you know, mired in all this racist language.
Well, this is part of the predominant culture of the United States. I mean, this is, we, you know, there's how many hundreds of millions of us, and there's no, you don't see people calling out people for doing this. People are too afraid. These people are aggressive, violent, threatening. They have been, they're the dominant culture. They're the ones, these people, whatever they're doing, from doing that to everything else. All, you know, you're talking, Rick, about guns. Why don't people get upset about why collectively we don't, we accept this. We don't, aren't doing anything about it. Things, we just don't. It just, it continues on somehow.
It's like Groundhog Day every day with all these shootings, you know, that we always hear about, you know, just never ending shootings. It's just, again, as Bob says, it's the, you know, it's a lottery coming to your town soon. I mean, who knows when, but someday soon.
Can we hear from Canada?
Yeah, jump in, Ron.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Ron.
Can you hear me from up here in the far frozen north?
Are you frozen, Ron?
We can hear you.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah, it's no fit night for man nor beast.
Aye, yeah, but the dogs love it. And the Scots in their kilts are out chasing sheep.
And the sheep are just about damn tired of it, too.
Well, yeah, there's a theory about why the zipper was invented.
Gives the sheep fair warning, right?
No, it was why the kilt was invented. So the sheep would have fair warning. I just wanted to call in and chat briefly about the transformative stuff that's going on up here politically that, you know, if I were living south of the border, I could only dream of. Can I expound?
To wit, yes, please.
Okay, we have a new government after 10 years of a conservative government, and they call themselves the liberal government. the young man heading up the Liberal government is the son of a former prime minister who had an incredible amount of charisma, Pierre Trudeau. His name is Justin. Through much of the campaign, the Conservatives and, to a certain extent, the New Democratic Party, which always regarded themselves as having the ownership of the left side of the political spectrum in Canada, they sort of referred to him, first of all, as Justin, to indicate how young he was, and the New Democratic Party referred to him as the leader of the third party. Well, he won. He won big time. Got himself a majority in Parliament, which means he doesn't have to pay the slightest bit of attention to anything either the old government or the old leftist party, I have to say. So what's the first thing he does? He appoints a cabinet, but he doesn't announce who they are. He puts them all on a chartered bus. He takes them to what is Rideau Hall, which is the home of the Governor General in Canada, which is the Queen's representative, which is the legal representative to recognize the new government in Canada. And he's asked by a broadcast reporter, so why are all your people coming here on a bus? And he responds perfectly. He says, a lot of people go to work on the bus. Nice point. Announces his cabinet. 15 females, 15 males.
Including one female who is the first Indigenous person to run the Canadian Department of Justice.
Absolutely. And, oh, she is a sharp tack. I've worked with her before a couple of times, and her mama didn't raise any fools. So, but continuing on with the narrative, it's all about the narrative, right, Bob?
It's always about the narrative.
He's asked, so what significance do you place on having 15 women in your cabinet out of 30 ministers? He just simply replied, well, it's 2015, and dropped it. And you could hear a pin drop. The journalist didn't have a clue how to react to that. And if you go through his cabinet, it's just a real microcosm of Canadian society, besides the obvious stuff of 15 female, 15 male. He's got Aboriginals, including the Minister for Justice, appointed. He's got a woman who's determined to find out what the hell is going on with 1,500 or thereabouts Aboriginal women disappearing over the last 10 years, and nobody's investigated. The previous government said, well, that's up to the local police department. And you know, we're all sitting back going, whoa, now this is different. This is like the Canada we remember. And so even, I bet if you took a poll today, more people in Canada would say they support the current government than they did the day before the election. I mean, people are walking around smiling. We have reintroduced the long-form census. That's the one that's mandatory that everybody had to reply to.
Mm-hmm.
As my son said, this is a start, but it'll never replace the five-year hole in all the data we've got.
Or the archaeological data that was thrown into dumpsters and burned and so forth?
Yep. The scientists are unmuzzled, Bob.
Freedom may be breaking out all over the place up there.
And you can do freedom without guns, damn it.
Now, stop talking sedition, okay? We don't want to get Agent Fred upset.
No, I'm on the other side of the border.
Well, I'm not. I'm the one they'll come after.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah. How about this for a new type of freedom protector? The ballot. What a novel idea.
Whoa. Yeah.
And as previously noted, I guess the ballots in Kentucky were a little dodgy on the video games.
You mean the ones that said mark X on the square on the screen and there was no square?
Yeah, and then you try to vote for the Democrat and the Republican lights up and the speaker yells, "Get over here!" You know, that, yeah.
So that moving circle on the screen.
Yeah.
Please mark your X in the circle.
Sounds like the butterfly ballot reprised from Palm Beach County, Florida in 2000.
Oh, bless his heart, Brad Friedman's been trying to get America to understand exactly how dodgy the video game voting machines are for a very long time. I mean, I won't. They always have one at my precinct, and I've never voted on one because I won't.
No, I remember when that stuff came through, what, 2000, the new voting machines. I can't believe the American sheeple once again just went back to their grazing, and I guess that's part of the grand design of the political system. Give the illusion of quote-unquote free thought, free speech, free elections or open elections, and just let it roll.
But Bob,
yes.
We haven't used those machines here in California for years.
There's more. We all know media is about optics, right?
Absolutely. And the narrative.
Yeah. So the old Department of the Environment in Canada, which everybody assumed that meant weather, has been renamed. It's now called the Department of the Environment and Climate Change.
Oh, boy, you better not tell Rick Scott that. He's going to throw a hissy fit, you know?
No, you're not allowed to say sea level rise. That as long as the Canadians don't say sea level rise, Rick Scott. No. Yeah, he won't need to invade.
There you go.
But they put a woman in charge of it, who's got a degree in French and international relations and a law degree in McGill and a practice competition in international trade law attorney.
Well, clearly Canada's veil of protection has been rent, and you'll soon have a volcanic eruption brought on by gay indigenous women who refuse to remain silent like God wants them to.
Yeah, but her senior minister, there's a little bit of a hierarchy. Her senior minister had his department's name changed. But the important thing is, he's a Sikh. He's a turban-wearing Sikh. I mean, what right government in the West would have a turban-wearing Sikh?
Wait, you left out something. He's a turban-wearing, knife-carrying Sikh.
He's Muslim.
No.
No, nah, damn it!
No. No, he's a good American. He's not Muslim, ma'am.
He's a good Canadian.
Yeah. And it's not a knife. It's a kerpan.
I just thought that was...
And you wear fashionably tailored, tastefully colored headdress. And he's heading up the Department of Industry, Science, and Innovation, which means he heads up basically the economic development of the country. He's the guy that's going to unmuzzle all of the scientists.
And see, this is of course how multiculturalism is supposed to work.
Right.
Everybody's supposed to say, well, you know, I might believe this or you might believe that, but we're all in the same boat together, and the boat's, and we're floating on gasoline, and we're just going to agree we're not going to throw any matches.
Yep. But wait, there's more. There was a lieutenant colonel in the Canadian Army Reserve, who was recognized early on for his ability to connect the dots. He ended up going to Bosnia-Herzegovina, I think it was called.
It was.
For one tour as a peacekeeper. Oh, what a joke that was. And then he did three tours in Afghanistan. By the halfway through the second tour in Afghanistan, he was recognized by everybody in the Canadian military as, ooh, this is the guy that can connect the dots. He analyzed all the relationships between all the various factions in Afghanistan and Pakistan, drew them up so that mere mortals could understand them, presented them to his bosses, the generals in the Canadian military, and it was regarded so highly that when the U.S. took over the UN mission in Afghanistan, he was specifically requested by the head of that group to, okay, can I have him as an advisor for a year because he's got his shit together. That guy rose up to lieutenant colonel in the reserves, but he was also a cop in Vancouver in reserve status, and he got elected. Guess who the new Minister of Defense is?
Well, well.
And even more, he's a Sikh with a full turban, got his shit together, and we're all going, okay, nobody up here is surprised. I'm just waiting for that guy to show up down in D.C.,
Could that be one of the people who influenced the decision to pull out of the coalition of the billing?
Yep. Absolutely. He's also the guy that's going to be responsible for pulling Canada out of the F-35 project.
Good. I mean, well, that's slower. Just intelligent.
I know. It goes slower. It goes lower. And it can't carry as much ordnance as the stuff we've offered. Why the fuck would we pay $40 million per plane on top of what we could get another F-18 for? Sorry. I'm starting to, you know, have all of my affirmations confirmed that I'm living in an intelligent country. This is cool.
I would go so far as to say downright exciting, wouldn't you?
Yeah, everybody up here is walking around with a smile on their face.
And I mean, you're right. You're right there in the national capital, right?
Yep.
And
I know some of these people personally. And they're all going. They got this sort of look. You know, if you pan it when you think the camera's not on them, you look at them and you go, ooh. What the hell just happened? I just get hit by a brick. All of a sudden, they're in charge. But they're good people. They'll rise to the occasion.
Sounds like a meritocracy, Ron, which is kind of a unique thing. I mean, we don't have that here in America in a lot of ways, you know?
You do. It's just that whoever pays the most buck has the most merit.
There you go.
you might be okay. So we've got that as a mirror to hold up to the nation. I do have to ask you, Ron, what has been the reaction up there to the official rejection of KXL?
Nothing special. Nobody's riding in the streets. There's no right wingers foaming at the mouth for it to be reinstated. There is a back channel effort to bump up the approvals for a Trans-Canada pipeline that used to carry material from the East Coast into Ontario, where East Coast has the ports, Halifax, St. John's, etc.,
yeah,
to bring refined products and crude oil into the East. TransCanada, the same company, decided they're not going to pursue this one, has upped the ante a bit in getting approvals for permission to reverse the flow in the existing pipelines and carry that oil directly to Halifax. In effect, that is a replacement for Keystone XL.
But I mean, isn't that a little counterproductive insofar as the oil is meant for China in the first place?
Oh, yeah. But
or is it an acknowledgement that even TransCanada can't get it through the indigenous lands?
It's both. We get it to the East Coast. We ship it to the Northwest Passage, which is open now for much of the year.
Up to October.
And we can ship it around the Horn or through the canal, and it still goes to Asia. We are burning a phenomenal amount of coal and oil. It's hard to imagine the numbers that are ramping up. It's going to make the amount of petroleum and coal that's used in North America pale by comparison. Doesn't hold a candle to it.
Well, right, and add into that what Brother Deacon Asa added toward the beginning of the program about the fact that we now know that China has been, in the words of Dim Leader, misunderestimating by about 17% the amount of coal they're burning in the first place.
Yeah, I sent you a note on that earlier on another channel, but I remember being there in the late 80s, November, cold snap. Everybody starts burning coal in Beijing. I couldn't see the ground from my hotel room. It was gray.
Yeah, everybody there turns into my neighbor down the hill here.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for the little warm snap that we've had because he hasn't been burning coal. But, we all know I'm... Well, I thought you would find... I asked you about what the reaction to KXL up there was, Ron, because I thought you might be interested in the reaction down here.
The bottom line up here, the reaction was muted.
Except at Stephen Harper's house where he's... They've had to shoot him in the neck with a Thorazine dart. Speaker of the House Eddie Munster, I mean Paul Ryan. I love it when you giggle, Tim.
Your biases precede you, sir.
And I've never said they don't.
I know.
I wouldn't pee on Paul Ryan to put out a fire.
No, I was laughing too.
Oh, that was you angry?
It was an angry laugh, not a Tim laugh.
Oh, okay. Getting an angry laugh is even rarer. I feel really good about that. He said when President Obama announced that the KXL was dead to him, he said it was, and I mean, this is a quote, sickening.
That's Eddie Munster saying that?
Yeah. By rejecting this pipeline, the president is rejecting tens of thousands of good-paying jobs. Of course, that merely tells us that Speaker of the House Eddie Munster is still an unrepentant liar. Because what were the number of jobs that KXL was actually going to create? 40, was it?
The long term was 50.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Tens of thousands in the short term, finishing the project, and then long term, 50.
All you got to have is the people who maintain the pump stations.
If the president wants to spend the rest of his time in office catering to special interests, that's his choice to make. But it's just wrong. In the House, we are going to pursue a bold agenda of growth and opportunity for all of the oil companies. I added the of the oil companies part, but I think we can read that in, don't you?
Haven't the House Republicans so. Been saying that for like 5 years now, ever since the election of 2010, about it's jobs, 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 you know, and they haven't done anything to create a single damn job.
But wait. The Keystone XL pipeline would create tens of thousands of jobs. It really would. Because just think of all those EPA Superfund sites that it's going to create every time it fucking leaks.
There you go. Mm.
So then all the EPA contractors can go run around there and clean the fucking shit up.
Well, that's a good point. But who makes the money? It's private industry. It doesn't have anything to do with reducing our energy, quote-unquote, costs.
Yeah, my sarcasm was very thinly veiled there, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, but see, but we understand you because this is the choir. If you said that to Joe Sixpack, and let's just say even Joe Sixpack sitting in a Starbucks who thinks that because he just spent $8 for a latte that he's, elevated, he or she, they don't want to hear this. You know, I mean, most of us here are old enough to remember in the 70s when they had the odd and even goddamn,
fill-up days.
Yeah, I was my friends and I as kids, we used to sit and eat chips and watch people have fist fights and shit at the fucking pump. You know, because they were fucking arguing, hey, you know, I got shit to do. I got a truck, I got a business, I need fucking gas. Oh, fuck you can't come here, whatever. They would
As a kid, I stood in line at a gas station just up the hill from our house. I stood in line and remember, those fuel crises were brought on not by a shortage of oil, but by our good friends and partners in peace, the good head loppers, the Saudis. Mm-hmm. Great guys. Just ask them. They'll tell you.
Hey, man.
But I would stand there and breathe other people's exhaust, just holding a place in line until my dad could, you know, come down the road on the way home from work. And, you know, and they knew. I mean, I was just, it's what you had to do because he had to get to work the next day. Meanwhile, just to share a little bit more response with you, T-Rump took to the Twitters, so sad, women, I can't do the accent, so sad that Obama rejected Keystone Pipeline, thousands of good jobs, good for the environment, no downside, good for the environment. I guess he's another one of those who signed onto the idea that caribou are going to hump on the pipeline.
Bob, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but the pipe's going to be in the ground.
That freaks me out so much. It's so disconnected from reality. Anybody with two-thirds or one-third of a clue knows that, but yet the majority of Americans, given the last election, you know, the recent elections, they just seem to buy that crap time and time again. And, you know, like somebody was saying, you know, you got to be careful. 2016, I'm going with Bernie. Still going with Bernie 100%. But, you know, if I have to, I'll go with Hillary. I can't go with a freaking Republican. But this seems to be the idiotic mindset of, unfortunately, not a plurality, easy for me to say, but maybe a majority of Americans. I hope not, and hope maybe we can wake up and smell the caffeine and hold on to 2018 too.
Yeah.
Well, we're not done here. The best, most obscene quote goes, of course, to pastor, brother, governor, reverend, minister, presidential candidate, former Arkansas governor, diabetes cure, snake oil salesman, Mike Huckabee.
Wow.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Ben Carson.
No.
Diabetes.
Why is Barack Obama so obsessed with worshiping the gods of green energy and rejecting the Keystone Pipeline? Why is Barack Obama more interested in satisfying radical liberals than creating tens of thousands of good-paying American jobs? Building the Keystone Pipeline is an absolute no-brainer. Well, yeah, I agree. If you've got no brains, you might think building that's a good idea. Too bad he's lost his mind. Radical Islamic terrorism is a greater threat than a sunburn.
Wow.
That piece of shit should just be jettisoned to the moon.
Well, no, I'd like for him to say all of that from maybe the Maldives Islands as the waters go. What happened to Mike Huckabee?
Hasn't Huckabee volunteered for the Mars mission? That's what I heard.
No, we got to send decent people to Mars. That may be our only hope.
There you go.
I mean, I have in the past argued that Mars needs Republicans because they say that CO2 is perfectly good and perfectly natural and it's good for you because it's in soda pop and beer and champagne. But I want them to go to Mars and breathe it.
I'm just waiting for somebody to ask me why I live in Canada.
Why, Ron, do you live in Canada?
We've had enough of your talking about Willis.
We've had enough of your utopian land. Most of us here don't even believe it exists, Ron.
Probably populated by unicorns and leprechauns
and rainbows.
And rainbows and hillbillies and stuff.
Now, the last time you guys pissed us off, we burned the White House in Baltimore.
That is true. And
this time we're sending down seats. They're trained. Yeah, we weren't.
Yeah, they're serious.
Oh, yeah. Don't piss them off. No.
Yeah, as Irish Dave pointed out, he says the new Minister of Defense is a Canadian Al Gore, too, also, since to accommodate his Sikh beard, he invented a protective gas mask. By the way, what about the jobs for the Keystone Cops and stuff?
And there's a few other posts out there that the new defense minister is a badass. He knows the military on the ground. He's got his stuff together. But he's a real, like every Sikh I have ever met, he is an incredibly peaceful individual, benevolent. Don't piss them off. I mean, their religion is so pacifistic that they will insist to the death on carrying the symbols of their religion, like the kirpan, the little small knife.
But of all of my DC cabbie stories, the best cab ride I ever had was with Boss Man Wayne, heading up to Best Buy on Wisconsin Avenue. In search of some gizmo or something for a broadcast when we were in D.C. once. And we had a Sikh cabbie who was, a joy to be in the car with. And he said, you know, it's so nice to drive non-judgmental people around. And gave me a little pamphlet on Sikhism on the way out the door. And said, you seem like the kind of person who would enjoy reading this. And I said, I am the kind of person who will enjoy reading this, and I wish you peace, and I wish you happiness. And he said, to you as well. And so I learned about all the gurus, and I learned about the color one chooses for one's head wrapping. And, purple means different from orange, means different from yellow, means different from white.
Or gray.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
My senior year housemate was a Sikh. One of the housemates, white turban.
I'm just going to make one general observation from. It goes back to when I was 19, maybe 20, which would be pushing 40 years. Every Sikh I have ever known has had an incredible ability to grow at one of those beards you look at and go, damn. And when you're young, that's an impressive attribute. I had a guy I worked with in, I guess, 73, 74, Sikh. He must have been all of 23 or 24. And I know this won't apply to you ladies. God, I hope not. But the ability to shave in the morning and then look like you needed to shave in the afternoon across your entire face was one of those things that we gave points for. I mean, this guy shaved twice a day. Shaved in the afternoon, shaved in the evening. Didn't shave in the morning because he said, there's nothing important to be done in the morning. And then afternoon and evening, he would shave again. This guy could grow a beard that made mine look like a week's worth of growth in about 5 hours.
Well, my problem was always that mine was blonde, and I could have grown one down to my navel and nobody would have seen it. It just, you know, they're
true.
The front of me would have just been kind of soft focus. And now that it's Santa Claus white, it's a different story.
Now, Bob, you've graduated to the Maven category.
Maven? I didn't even know there was one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, that's a Jewish word. What are you talking about?
My wife calls it a hungry beard. You can see right through it.
Alexander, you know what?
Actually, all that beard growing sounds like somebody's been saving up too much damn testosterone.
Alex, you don't want to know how many princesses I've dated
all right.
over 50 years. No.
Somebody can. I mean, I know mensch. I've been called a mensch from time to time, but you know, my Yiddish doesn't.
That's the ultimate Yiddish term is to call someone a mensch, yes. Right, Larry?
Yeah, he is a mensch.
Eddie, I'd love to jump back in a topic a couple hour or an hour or so ago about Roundup and wheat.
Yes, please.
Okay. The reason they spray the fields with Roundup is to get all the wheat the same amount of dryness so it goes through the combine in a beautiful, nice way so all the chaff goes out the blower and all the wheat goes into the back end. But if you deal with the evidence, you find the incredible increase in gluten intolerance tracks the Roundup sprayed on the wheat. And I'm not saying they're not glucose intolerant. I'm not saying that at all. But I think the glyphosate combined with the gluten is making the glucose intolerant in much the same way as the reduction of cane sugar in the soda drinks and the inclusion of the high fructose corn syrup has increased diabetes. Now,
exactly.
Nobody has yet absolutely dealt with this causes this, but the correlation is incredible.
That's pretty much exactly what I was alluding to. There is one woman, Roger, that is this scientist. I cannot remember her name. I will find her by the end of the chat tonight, you know, the later chat. I will get that research to you because I heard her on another radio show, and it's pretty good stuff. And it goes further than just intolerance to gluten.
But the correlation is incredible. The causality is not yet found.
Yeah,
and there's
a big difference
between correlation and causality. But when the correlation is there, I forget the name of it, but the preventative principle. When you start seeing this shit happen, maybe we ought to change. And if we don't change and it keeps getting worse and worse and worse and worse, by the time it is actually found, i.e. cigarettes and lung cancer, by the time, you know, it's like 15 or 20 years between when it first shows up and the scientific proof comes up, too many people have been screwed over. And it's like this whole climate number. Exxon knew in the 1970s that burning fossil fuel was increasing the temperature, and that's going to screw shit up. And all of a sudden this year on the California coast, they're not opening up the crab fishing season because the oceans are warming up. There's an algae that's blooming. It's putting a toxin into the muscle meat of the crabs, which is what you eat when you eat crab. And all of a sudden, the crab season is toast, and 90% of the crab fishermen I know are right-wing Republicans that were voting for Mitt Romney and, you know, all the rest of that shit. And all of a sudden, they ain't got no fucking money because they can't go fishing, but they're still not willing to allow Barack Obama to be the president or any Democrat.
Well, no. It's liberalism that's liberalism's keeping them. It's that radical environmentalism, Roger, that's keeping them from fishing up those sick crabs. I mean, look at the story. Then there's the story about the cod population off the Gulf of Maine. You know, which is in crisis. Hey, I have to shift gears for a minute because I got a question.
Those goddamn liberals that don't want you to fish.
Right. Exactly. Just like it's those tree huggers that don't want you to cut down, you know, 1,000-year-old redwoods, you know, commies. Hey,
thanks,
Angry.
Obama.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you stepping in for Gerald there, Rick. Hey, Angry. You there? Oh, Angry. Did we lose Angry?
He's here.
No, he must have stepped away for a minute or something.
Away for a second, yeah.
Okay, because I had a question from Jim. Jim was hoping that Angry might, because Angry tends to know about these things. I'm familiar with the story as well. Wanted to know about the about Cadet Carson at West Point. Are y'all familiar with this story?
No.
Yeah, it's just new today, as far as I know.
Bill? I heard that there, you know, the right is complaining, but I don't know what the original issue was.
Well, see, the only reason that Mumblin' Ben ever got anybody's attention is because he wrote an autobiography. And of course, it's more hagiography than autobiography because it's in praise of the cult of Mumblin' Ben. And in his autobiography, going back to 1998 or so, he tells the story of how, instead of becoming a world-famous healer, a neurosurgeon, that he almost went to West Point because he had been given an appointment there, too. And not just by anybody, mind you. Mumblin' Ben claims that he was given an appointment to West Point by some famous member of the Vietnam era brass. Hold on here, I got
Westmoreland.
Was it Westmoreland?
Yeah.
And that only because he chose not to go to West Point was he able to become a famous healer. Politico reported the story, and there's an editor's note at the top of it now. It says, Politico stands by its reporting on this story, which has been updated to reflect Ben Carson's on-the-record response. The original story and headline said that Carson's campaign had admitted he fabricated a full shot scholarship from West Point, because, of course, there's no such thing, really, as a full scholarship from West Point. It is an appointment, okay? You receive via your member of Congress, via your senator. I think the president can appoint some, and there's various other ways where you can get into West Point or Annapolis or Colorado Springs or whatever from the ranks themselves. But it's all by appointment, and it's extremely competitive. But it turns out, he never even applied for an appointment, and neither was he granted admission or an appointment to West Point. He's just, you know, Ben Carson is just a self-aggrandizing liar. I mean,
let me step in here for a second. The only academy that is truly on merit is the Coast Guard Academy. And you take a test, and if they're going to admit 200 people, they come down the list. The top 200 are offered. And if they don't take it, they keep coming down the list. When you get to any other academy other than the Coast Guard Academy at New London, there are these presidential, congressional, political number appointments. So if somebody applies for an appointment, and they're from California, and the senator from California has a candidate that they know, whatever, political bullshit, even though the person had a higher score on the test, the other person, because they have connections, can get appointed. The Coast Guard Academy is 100% on the test to get appointed, and they come right off the test. And if 100% of the people come from Connecticut that year that pass the test, then 100% of the new cadets will come from Connecticut. And how do I know that? It caught it, it. You had to get 5,585 points or something the year I took the test to get into the academy, and I missed it by 500 points out of the 5,000. So I know about the Coast Guard Academy.
Well, there, I think there is there's no doubt whatsoever, Roger, that Mumblin' Ben has been lying ever since he wrote that autobiography. Well, his campaign is backtracking for all it's worth, saying, "Oh no, no, he really did. He really didn't." I mean, I know a little bit about the academy process too, because lo and behold, I did. I went through the process. It starts out, you got to have the grades and all of that stuff, and you ask your senator, you ask your member of Congress, and in my instance, I was not interested in the least in Colorado Springs or West Point. I was interested in Annapolis because of family tradition. And so I wrote my senator. They got all the details, and lo and behold, there it was. I had a nomination for an appointment to the United States Naval Academy. But that's the nomination for the appointment. It's not the appointment. That comes later.
Okay, when I was, God, what, 50 years ago? 52 years ago or thereabouts, when I was looking at getting into the Coast Guard Academy, I wrote to my senators and reps and all the rest of that crap, and they came back with, "You got to take the test. You get high enough on the test, you get in. It has nothing to do with us. If you want to be in the Air Force, the Navy, the Marines, etc., then there's a possibility. The Coast Guard, you take the test, total test. We have no ability to appoint you to the Coast Guard."
Well, what Mumblin' Ben says, what Mumblin' Ben says in his autobiography is, let's see. "I felt so proud, my chest bursting with ribbons and braids of every kind. To make it more wonderful, we had important visitors that day. Two soldiers who had won the Congressional Medal of Honor in Vietnam were present. More exciting to me, General William Westmoreland attended with an impressive entourage. Afterwards, Sergeant Hunt introduced me to General Westmoreland, and I had dinner with him and the Congressional Medal winners. Later, I was offered a full scholarship to West Point."
This guy is totally overcompensating. The guy's like,
No, like, Rick, I think in something as important as this, we need to use really, really plain language. This man, this Christian, is lying.
Yeah.
And he's lying because he is a liar.
Pathologically so.
And you know, Bob pointed out,
you don't get a scholarship, you get an appointment.
Yeah, well, right. How could he have survived the vetting process after he'd nearly hacked somebody to pieces, cuz you know, he was going through his crazy phase and I almost cut a bitch.
And yet they can't find any witness or anybody that was assaulted.
Right,
such a fucking tool.
Well, just like they can't find the Popeyes robbery where he said, no, you don't want me. I think you want the kid who's making minimum wage across the counter. He's got all the money. I'm just a world-famous neurosurgeon.
I think Angry said it right to me on a back channel earlier, and he said Ben Carson's nothing but a place for the white racists to hang their hopes and get their apologies out and nominate the frickin' tool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not a racist. I'll support Ben Carson, but I hate Obama.
Yeah, there you go.
That's all it is. Ben Carson was born here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, we've got about 20.
The hell it is, this goddamn poll that came up that said Ben Carson can beat Hillary Clinton. Where the hell did they come up with that shit?
You know what? I'll be honest here, and I don't want to piss off the Hillary fans. I think by the time all is said and done, if she's the nominee, any one of them can beat her, and not on the issues, but because the machine that they have been building since 1992 has been designed for this very purpose.
I don't even think it's that, Bob. You know why I think that she's going to get beaten if she's the nominee? It's because the base ain't going to show up for her. Ain't gonna happen.
Well, there are 14%, according to the data.
There are
14% of voters in the Democratic Party who say there is no way. And by no way, they mean no how, not with the house burning down, not in a box, not in the fox, not in the rain, not on a train, that they would ever vote for Hillary Clinton. And it's not because, and it's not because 14% of the Democratic Party are misogynists or anti-woman. It's like I saw one posting earlier in the day. It said, "I can't wait to vote for the first woman president, Elizabeth Warren."
What?
There you go.
I will vote for Hillary with no problem compared to any of these fucking wingnut Republicans. I want to vote for Bernie. I want that to be the reality. But given the option, and okay, I'm three, four years older than you, Bob. I'm looking at it like I got like maybe three, four, or five elections to vote in. And if I don't think a Democrat gets in, we're definitely going down real fast, particularly if it's not Bernie. But if it's a Republican, man, things are going to go, it's just going to hit the fan.
Interesting note from Steve up in New York. He says, okay, I'll say it, you know, because I've complained about people not saying it. In regard to Mumbling Ben, okay, I'll say it, Steve says. He's not a Christian. He's certainly no follower of the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi. And I say amen. Steve also notes in regard to Hillary, I am the 14%.
I don't like Hillary, and the only reason why I would ever vote for her is if it was her against a Republican, and it's also the Supreme Court nominees, which is vital because we all know how they have completely dismantled and are completely corporate owned and have completely, so that's the only reason why I would do
it. That's a very good reason, Alex.
That's
because
wrong.
Law interfaces with every aspect of our lives these days, you know?
I'm pretty much to the point where it's Bernie or bust for me. I might stay at home because, seriously, Alex, how much more time do you really think we have left before we've destroyed our children's future and made the entire planet uninhabitable?
I understand.
Jay Cruz, and I understand that, but by the same token, I have likened that to the impulse that is very, very easy to leverage, especially among those of us who acknowledge that, you know, this is not a democracy. This is it quit being a republic. This is a corporate plutocracy, an oligarchy. This is a crumbling empire. But the problem is when you give up and you say, you know, burn, baby, burn. Well, it's easy to say, but it is hell on earth to subject someone to. And
fast it burns.
Well, it is. And you know what? I would prefer the slow one to the fast one. Okay? Because I'm going to watch grannies go hungry. We've already got 1 in 4 children in this country going to bed hungry every night. You know, they may not go right after granny, but my generation, you know, I'm what I've referred to in the past as the cat food generation. I'm the generation that already got screwed on Social Security. 62 and 65 are meaningless numbers to me, okay? And they want to take my 67 and they want to turn it into 70.
Yeah.
Okay?
Well,
I'm not willing to do that to the rest of my generation. And so, yeah, I mean,
it's not irreversible. Maybe you just show this shit to people and let them see what these assholes they want to put in there are really going to do, and maybe that's what's going to push it over the cliff and say, hey, you know what? These Republicans, we can't be having this anymore.
They're not going to
reappoint. Yeah, but Jason, I cannot let it happen. I have to do everything I can to prevent it from happening. And delay it.
You may actually be part of the problem.
No, it's like fighting a rear guard action. Okay, And it's about community, too, because there aren't enough of us to feed everybody who's going to need fed. There's not enough of us to keep the lights on for everybody who's going to need the lights kept on. And we don't do, I mean, even the American Revolution, we don't do revolution. The revolution was never supported by more than 30% or so of the people in the colonies, okay? And if there's some great dream, and God knows others have had it too, if there's some great dream that the mass of Americans are going to take to the streets if only the cable gets turned off and march and occupy Washington until the will of the people is done, bullshit, he said to Robin, and he turned and walked away, okay? Because in that day, when that happens, the fascist government will, I mean, look what happened to the Bonus Army, okay? The fascist government will turn around and turn the machine guns on the people of the United States, and everybody will then go home and keep their heads down like you're supposed to do in a fascist regime. And that's a piss poor reason for voting for Hillary. I acknowledge it. But it's probably what I'm going to wind up doing.
And once the fascism is firmly entrenched, there's hardly any way of reversing it unless you're attacked by, let's say, other countries to, you know, because of, let's say, America's overreaching.
Well,
you know,
I mean, I was thinking just the other day, Rick, considering history, consider the end of World War II, okay? Europe is in a shambles. From Moscow in the east to London in the west, from Holland to Italy and Greece. It's total wreck. But left out of all of the rebuilding and left out of all of the retooling and realigning and everything was Spain. Spain had had its fascist revolution. It had a fascist dictator in charge of the government and a nominal king. And, you know, and there we were in the 1970s, and Chevy Chase made a joke out of, "Good evening, Generalissimo Francisco Franco is still dead." but the horrors of that fascist revolution and of that fascist regime have long been forgotten and are not paid nearly as much attention to as, say, the fascist regimes of Italy or Germany.
No, it's true.
And so, fascist regimes can just toddle along and toddle along and toddle along, and if we're not already there, and I think we are already largely there, and all you have to do is give the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives to these, and you're not giving it to the Republicans anymore. It's not like Eisenhower's going to win, okay? It's not even like Nixon's going to win. You're giving the reins of power to the teabaggers.
And there's only 40 of those motherfuckers in the House of Representatives, and they're controlling the entire House of Representatives.
No, Roger, that's the Freedom Caucus. There's a hell of a lot more teabaggers in Congress than that. I mean, for God's sakes, Paul Ryan is a teabagger, okay? The Freedom Caucus is the weirdest phalange of the teabaggers.
Well, they got 40% of the vote. How do we deal with 40% of the population that votes?
Everybody gets an AR-15 and just mows them fuckers down, and if you get the needle, you get the needle, but you save the country.
Well, there's a whole lot more of them than there are us who are willing to do that, Roger. So,
well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, you've got dumbasses on the progressive side who want a goddamned Article 5 convention.
Yeah, speaking of that, Bob, this is my AM radio tidbit heard last night on Levin's show.
Yeah.
He was talking to people saying, we've almost got, you know, enough states to do this, and here's a website. It's like conventionofstates.org or com. So I Googled it, and there's a lot of other websites. I mean, they're, you know, he's actually talking to people about how close it is. It's not just his book anymore, you know?
Well, it is close. They're very close. And the idea that we've got a handful of progressives out there, and I generally don't throw stones at other progressive broadcasters especially, but the idea that Cenk Uygur thinks that an Article 5 convention is a good idea and that we'll just take our goddamn daisies and walk up and put it in the barrels of the right wing's guns and walk into the Koch brothers-sponsored Article 5 convention and say, okay, now we know that some of you have things you want to do, but we just want to take care of Citizens United and leave. Okay, great. And then they'll get their guts stomped out.
And you know what?
And they will have been participants in their own demise.
Uh-huh.
And Cenk Uygur is a lawyer. I can't believe he thinks this is a good idea.
I wouldn't put it past the right wing to be actually, like, funding some of these anti-Citizens United, you know, let's have a convention people, you know, just like I think they did Nader one time.
Well, I mean, most of Nader's campaign funding in 2000 and 2004 came from the RNC or Republican front groups. I mean, it's a fact.
Constitutional convention is a wet dream for the fucking right wing.
Yeah, yeah, goodbye. You don't like the 14th Amendment? Goodbye. And, of course, the best way to understand this is to backtrack into Dr. Bill's archives and understand exactly what it means. See, James Madison walked into a convention and hijacked it, and that's how we got the Constitution.
Any constitutional convention that it happens right now opens up the entire Constitution to a revision.
It's not just one issue, this issue, that issue.
The entire Constitution becomes open to debate.
It's the stupidest idea I've ever fucking heard of.
And this is a Dr. Bill number. And this is why he, from my few times I listen to him, but I try to listen to him a lot, but it is a absolute fucking disaster.
It's a total Trojan horse.
A total constitutional convention, because the right wing has funded to their side.
Yeah. Hey, we are running out of time, so let me just throw this last note out there. We are within $36.02 of finishing the week to the good, or not to the good, but to the even. And we are at $165 on a matching challenge of $250 from Chris in Germany. So hopefully those two, and we'll push the $36.02. All the challenges have been met. That's just what's left over. But the $165, it would be a shame to because we got one expensive gizmo left to buy. We have retooled the entire studio. All the equipment is new now. And so there shouldn't be any ugly noises. We're ready to go and do the fill-in work and everything. That matching contribution from Chris is extremely important. There's $165 to go on it. Thus far, Randy and Thomas and Carol have kicked in on it. And hey, Bob, I really hope
Bob,
that could
can
be
I
matched.
Step in here a second?
Well, go right ahead.
I'll finish the 3602, and I'll match the next. That's a matching challenge for the next four people. So that's four of your 3602s. I'll match.
Are you saying if four people kick in 3602? What?
I'm going to kick in 3602 four times.
Okay, so if we can get four 3602s, okay, and we can move that over to the matching challenge on the equipment fund. And
that's absolutely the purpose of my matching.
Okay, beautiful. Well, we've got one of them. So three to go. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very kindly.
Hey, Bob?
Yeah.
It's Ron.
Yeah, Ron.
Can I throw in a word I haven't heard all night?
Do, please.
Just to preempt any other polls that are going on, can I say the word Hitler?
850. Damn it, Gerald! How does he do it? I think we may have more than one third stage guild navigator in this group.
Okay, I'm done now, Bob.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
So we got for every 30, the next three 3602s that come in, Jay Cruzen's going to match them, and that's awesome. Thank you, Jay Cruzen.
Thanks, Jay Cruzen, and go Hillary, ha ha.
And I know Alex is going to go out shopping for little pistol earrings probably tomorrow, right, Alex?
Oh, God.
You can probably find them online.
And I'm going to go take some more swimming lessons.
You do that. Well, I mean, all you got to do is wait for another king tide, and you can go, and all of, and South Florida becomes a swimming pool, right?
Yeah, I got a whole lot to say on that, but I'll save that for the later on discussion.
Okay, and by way of a reminder, and this has been a rousing group. We've had a ton of people in here. Thank you, Roger, and thank you, Angry, and thank you, Alex and Ron in the Unfrozen North. Thank you for the original challenge that got all of this started, Billable Rick. Thank you, Jay Cruzen, for that challenge that's going to close the program. Thank you, Tim from L.A. Thank you, Jack, and thank you, Larry. And of course, thank you, Sparky, for moderating for lo these many years the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thanks to Jim for joining in from Louisiana, Stan. And like I said, a general reminder that the Horn Malloy Skype chat group will pick back up in rousing form, I have no doubt, come 12:05 Eastern Standard Time after Malloy closes out his Friday broadcast, which is coming up in about 10 minutes. Thanks go out to all of you for your support of the program. Thank you very, very kindly to everyone who responded. Again, thanks to Billable Rick, and thanks to our anonymous contributor. Thanks to Sister Carol. Thank you very kindly. I'm just going back in. Thank you, Joan, and thank you, Jack. Thank you, Sylvia, for jumping in on the subscription process. Thank you, Gerald, and thank you, John. And thank you, Steve and Jay Cruzen. One and all, thank you very kindly. You're how this continues, this little community continues. Thank you for the precious finite time all of you spend in joining in this ongoing conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the bravest, hardest working people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. Jay Cruzen, the second 3602, just came in. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. It is the weekend, and there's going to be technical work to be done here, wiring up some gizmos this weekend. What fun. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a good weekend, everybody.